Hello, everybody. My name is On, and this is On's Guide to Talk for 2nd of February, Tuesday, the 2nd of February, 2021. It's your boy On right here, back at it. Obviously, we've got more little tidbits about technology to talk about, new devices, you know, everything happening in the world of technology, everything from phones to streaming to electric cars to anything to do with technology, anything that has a hand in technology, or you could say has got a bit of tech, we are there to break sort of bring in the scoop. These past couple days, as always, this past week has been is also another slow week, but really there's still a lot to talk about. We're just gonna jump straight in, because I think the longer we wait, I think I'm just gonna skip this podcast, but oh well, let's just jump in. The first big story, really, and I think everyone's been talking about this because it's so significant and important, and that is, so an interesting turn of events, Google's game streaming service, Stadia, has kind of announced that they're shutting down their internal game studio that they launched when Stadia launched earlier in 2019, probably well over a year back in 2019, and they had their own internal game studio to pump out original game content, original games, and unique experiences for Google's game streaming service. But obviously, running a game streaming service is already difficult or kind of hard. And you could probably imagine that it's difficult to find great games when you have your internal teams. Again, it's no match for, say, platform holders like Sony or Microsoft and Nintendo, who all have consoles or make consoles or platforms, but also they make their own games. The Stadia, I would say that Stadia, I feel like, you know, there was like a joke that was coming around, you know, like after doing nothing, we decided to shut down and they just took a picture from The Simpsons. It was kind of a joke. But also, it's crazy how Google Stadia, like Google itself was like, we're not going to miss. So the statement here, their claim really is that, and I'm going to read this here. This is the blog post that Google itself wrote. About this development. In 2021, we're expanding our efforts to help game developers and publishers take advantage of our platform technology and deliver games directly to their players. We see an important opportunity to work with partners seeking a gaming solution, all built on Stadia's advanced technical infrastructure and platform tools. We believe this is the best path to building Stadia into a long-term sustainable business that helps grow the industry. Creating best-in-class games on the ground up takes many years and significant investment, and the cost is growing up exponentially. Given our focus on building on the proven technology of Stadia, as well as deepening our business partnerships, we've decided that we will not be investing further in bringing exclusive content from our internal development team, SGE, which essentially stands for Stadia Games and Entertainment, beyond any near-term planned games, with increased focus on using our technology platform for industry partners. Jade Raymond has decided to leave Google to pursue other opportunities. We greatly appreciate Jade's contribution to Stadia and wish her the best of luck in her future endeavors. Over the coming months, most of the SGE team will be moving on to new roles. We're committed to working with this talented team to find new roles and support them. Now, if you think about it, this essentially is Google's own wording that, hey, we'd love to make our own games. We are a streaming service. We're going to have our own content. We're going to have our own originals. Again, if you're in the streaming business, you know what I mean by original content. But, you know, games are hard. To be genuine with you, I mean, the thing is, gaming is a very difficult business. Well, not too difficult, but it's a really difficult business. And it costs a lot of money to develop games. There's a lot of work. There's a lot of people. There's not much talent out there developing. I don't want to say there's a shortage of game developers. There are not many out there. And so it is quite difficult, you know, in that sense. And so they're like, well, we'd love to have our own originals, but it's so hard to make games, man. I mean, it takes a long time. And then you can't make money straight off the bat. You know, like Microsoft or Sony. Microsoft has an impressive array of game studios that they have bought, and they have their own already for the last couple of years. I mean, again, Microsoft, this is where you'd say Microsoft has its biggest strength, is having your own game studio that pumps out really good content that everyone knows creates cutting edge games. The thing about it is Microsoft's Xbox, which already runs Game Pass Ultimate, which offers game streaming. I mean, it has a lot of studios and it has a lot of studios. So Xbox Game Studios, by comparison, owns the main studios that created the Halo Gears of War franchise. Let's see. We're kind of going through this. Minecraft, Fallout, some really famous games. Forza, and obviously Rare, which has created Killer Instinct and Battletoads, which kind of were revived, you know, by Microsoft. And obviously, and again, all of my Xbox's more popular games. Now, and also recently, and we talked it recently in our show, in a recent episode, that on how they've bought out ZeniMax Media, which makes games like Fallout and all that. I mean, the developers of Doom are owned by Microsoft. I'm kind of hovering through information here. That's interesting. Oh, so just bit of a kind of a heads up. Microsoft's deal to buy ZeniMax Media is yet to be cleared by March. So until then, they're kind of their own company. But still, the fact that Microsoft has these many game studios that it owns and it can make its own original content as a result. But the thing is, game development is a different deal from, say, making your own blockbuster movies or TV shows. It's a different market. It's difficult. And also, let's face it, Google runs platforms. It's not really a media company. I mean, it can't really make its content, if you know what I mean. And so that's a challenge that I think needs to be understood. But yeah, it's quite an embarrassment, if you know what I mean, if you think about it, that Google has launched a game streaming service after everything, but can't really make its own games that will be sort of exclusives to their platform. I mean, I'd say the one advantage of original content is it's on your own platform. You don't have to take it anywhere else. It's on your platform first, and so that's the interesting fact. But essentially, this shutdown will essentially cost 150 jobs. The 150 folks who worked on games for the service, they'll be laid off and they'll have to get work elsewhere. So that's annoying. But also, I think it shows an interesting shift. Like, Google's business model at Stadia is becoming more and more off that they want to maintain a streaming platform. So, you know, their developers around the world, their indies and stuff, and big AAA studios, the indies, they want to make games and then they want to able to stream it on any other device, on any and every device out there, from Chromebooks to big screen TVs, and they need like a platform to do that. And so Google sort of delivers it with Stadia. And so by getting out of the publishing business, developing and publishing business, which could be disadvantageous down the road. And also, I think it is shocking that they're not making their own games anymore, because really the thing with streaming is it's a different situation compared to, say, making consoles and then having stuff on it. Streaming, like, you can go, I mean, game studios, the biggest ones and the more iconic ones, can go direct to consumer, and that's the bigger problem, you know. Google, though, has the advantage of technology. They have a streaming service ready to use. A lot of people have it and all that good stuff, and so people can essentially, developers can rely on it. In fact, after this news came out, FIFA 2021 will be launching on Stadia, I think, next month. So that's interesting. But I think what's more interesting is that Google's obviously going to push more of the fact that they have the streaming technology, and so studios can drop their games onto Stadia, and so they can take advantage of the fact that Google has this good streaming service. But really, down the road, The thing is, the video game business is quite technical to an extent. And so there's nothing stopping EA or, I don't know, I mean, Xbox is already into streaming, and that's going to be a big deal. And also they're starting to buy more game studios, which would kind of strengthen its value proposition. But there's nothing stopping the likes of Epic Games or EA from launching their own streaming service. Nothing could stop them. They have so much technical power. They have so much technical background that they could essentially run out and launch a service. Nothing could stop them. And so this could be a what could be a shift in focus could kind of end up being a mistake that Google could be making. And the thing is, game development, you won't get something in a year. It takes time. Making games takes a ton of time. You plan to make games, and then you sort of set a lot of work, and you set stage the worlds, and there's a lot of work behind making games. I think people do not understand or appreciate it enough. But then again, coming back to the bigger picture, there's nothing stopping your EA and Epic and CD Projekt Red or those sorts of studios, really big ones that make big franchises and games. They can run and launch their own streaming service, or heck, host it on a distributed cloud platform, because they already have the chops to do it these days. So this could be a potential mistake for Google down the road. I'm just saying, but it just makes a ton of sense, honestly, if you ask me. I mean, it is a hard business, and it might burn a lot of money for them, so they probably ditched it straight away. So pretty interesting times for Stadia, if you know what I mean. It's another day and another leak of a smartphone, because we love smartphones. This time, it's another cheap OnePlus phone, literally. So, tipster Max Jambor kind of revealed that OnePlus's next affordable phone, really, which is under its Nord line, will literally be called, get this, the Nord N1 5G. Now, if you're getting confused a little more, don't worry. It's this OnePlus screwing us over, right? And sadly, Carl Pei has left, I believe. I have to double-check this one, though. Carl Pei, has he left? Yeah, okay, he's no longer at OnePlus, even. He has his own startup called Nothing. Nothing. But this is obviously going to be the fourth OnePlus Nord phone after the OnePlus Nord, the original, then the N10 and the N100, which is kind of confusing. Now, one would think the N100 has the most amount of features and it's high-end, but no, that's actually the cheapest phone, and the N10 is premium. Kind of confusing, you know what I mean? It's kind of confusing. Now, there's nothing much that has been stated about the Nord N1, aside from the fact that it will likely sport a plastic shell, and would probably have a mid-range Snapdragon chipset. Honestly, confusing name. I don't know what they're really thinking about. It'll be affordable, obviously, under €300, $300. But, honestly, if you ask me, they could have called it the N200 or the N20. That would help kind of push the naming scheme. And also, there's not much information about when this will come out. This might come in the next couple of months, obviously before the second half of this year. I'm probably thinking this way, probably before the beginning of the second half of this year, probably by Q3. We got the OnePlus 9 to roll out, the OnePlus 9 series. That's planning to come out, and that has a whole lot of specs. So that's pretty much that, the N1. They could have called the N20. That would really help everybody, but nope. They just want to stick it with the N name, N1. I don't know what's next. N1000? That'd be a good gaming phone. That'd like be €100. Oh well. Moving on. MediaTek have released a new modem, the Helio M80. There is already, I was surprised to see that MediaTek makes network chips. I didn't see that happen, but oh well, that's kind of lovely. The Helio M80 is essentially the first modem from MediaTek to do millimeter wave 5G. Now, it features 8 component carriers, which essentially kind of pick up and transmit and receive signals, probably. I don't want to be ignorant, but that's how it looks like. It offers sub-6 gigahertz connectivity easily with more than two carrier aggregation. Essentially, it's two radio signals combined, and you can get like blazing fast speeds. So you get, you know, take, I don't know, 1850 megahertz and 2150 megahertz frequency combined, and essentially, you know, deliver good connectivity. 5G dual SIM support, non-standalone and standalone support. That's actually a very complicated thing, non-standalone, standalone. That actually deserves to be a whole other episode of my podcast or another podcast I'm thinking about. What the heck is 5G? Also, you could do dual 5G, non-standalone, standalone functionality. Dual voiceover, new radio support, which essentially is 5G version of VoLTE. And category 19, LTE downlink capabilities. Quite complex information. More interestingly, it has ultra-safe tech for improved power efficiency, which means you'll hopefully have a cellular chip that doesn't drain battery at all. The Helio M80 is expected to be available in phones later in 2021, which means that by next year, you'll see phones with this network chip. But the most interesting element of it all is that the Helio M80 has millimeter wave 5G support. Until recently, MediaTek's chips have come with just mid-band 5G support, which could be a bit of a problem for phones in the US, where US networks, American networks, and say mobile networks in China and South Korea to an extent have millimeter wave networks and are capable of delivering gigabit speeds and is incredibly fast and really good service compared to low or mid-band 5G. And the fact that MediaTek now has a chip to offer those users in the US and Korea to just get online to those millimeter wave networks is kind of cool. For reference, this modem can reach speeds of 7.67 gigabytes download and has upload speeds maximum theoretical of 3.76. Okay, let me correct that. That's 7.67 gigabits per second download, 3.76 gigabits. Upload, I almost said megabytes, I hope, I'll have to see this in post-production, oh well. And that's a dramatic jump from obviously the slightly lower, and this is theoretical, this is the maximum this chip is capable of. In real life, it probably will be way lower than this, so obviously, obviously, as always, with anything to do with 5G, and talk about theoretical maximums, please keep this in mind. In real life, it would be lower, but yeah. Aside from that, the Helio M80 looks interesting as a unique cellular chip. So that's something to really, this is really a chip to look forward to. It might be in an upcoming MediaTek chip near you, really, if you think about it. Samsung's just dropped another affordable phone. I think we kind of, this is from the M series, so you've not heard much about it. Samsung has an affordable lineup of phones called which is the M series. And so they have it for emerging markets like India, where there are a lot of people buying phones. And obviously, I'm sure Samsung's sales of the M series phones have really shot up in the past year, given what's kind of happened in India. Oh, well, so they have a new model, the M02, the M02, which has a 6.5-inch V-shape notch, you could say, infinity V display with HD plus resolution and is in a water drop notch with it, which again is a V shape. Has a 30 megapixel back camera and 2 megapixel macro. Obviously, every phone's got to have 2 megapixel macro and a 5 megapixel selfie camera because you know selfies matter. Now, it comes with this weird chip that I've never heard of, the MT6739W, which has SoC. And that with 2 or 3 gigabytes of RAM, 30 gigabytes of storage, and has an microSD card. Shocker, shocker. The Galaxy S21 series, all of them, don't feature a microSD card at all, which is shocking. A shocking revelation, if you know what I mean. Whereas the Galaxy M02 has a microSD card. It kind of makes sense given the audience this is for. Obviously, if you're spending, I mean, this is only available in India right now, so if you spend like 1 or 2 lakh on a phone and you don't and you're out of storage, you could just, you know, back up the phone, sell it to somebody and get a new faster phone with more storage, whereas those paying way less money than this don't have an option. So having a micro SD card is interesting here, and you can go up to 1 terabyte of storage. The Galaxy M02 weighs is 9.1 millimeters thick in height, and weighs 206 grams, and has a 5,000 milliamp hour battery. Only has micro USB, no USB-C, which kind of sucks, but comes with One UI, which is running on Android 10, and this would run smoothly enough that people don't really care. So, and it has this plastic back, as always. It has this plastic back, but it has a bit sparkly to make it a little elegant. The Galaxy M02 will start with 2 gigabytes of RAM and 32 gigabytes of storage. Is now available for roughly 6,999 Indian rupees. So that's roughly $96, give and take. But right now, obviously, they're obviously selling it for $3 less. So that's $93 right there. We don't know when they'll be. There's no information about the 3 gigabyte variant. Oh well. But you can order it now. You can buy it. It'll go on sale on February 9th on Amazon.in. If you are in the market for a really cheap phone, you know where to go. I did kind of hear there's a Poco X3 Pro coming out, so that's interesting. But speaking of Xiaomi, really, the Mi 11 could be launching globally on February 8th. This is from 95 Google. Big shout out to 95 Google. They wrote, actually GM Samarina broke the story early, that. Coding the Portuguese Mi community page, that is kind of an announcement. Okay, this is last week's story. Yikes. They kind of there's a posted picture really, and it showed like how the new generation of movie lovers' phone, given how the camera is, you know, how the display is, so it's crispy. And so it mentioned the date of February 8th, 2021, and obviously the relevant time, 8 o'clock, GMT plus 8, which kind of means that Xiaomi could be launching the Mi 11, and it's probably going to cost, it's going to cost a good amount of money. So Mi 11 will get a global launch on February 8th, and that's something to look out for, and that's literally next week, so... I think next Monday, essentially, coming Monday, so that's really good. I mean, and again, given the specs you're getting here, it's going to be really good, but obviously it won't be the cheapest option, it'll cost good money right over here. On top of that, more Xiaomi stuff, the Redmi K40 Pro could possibly feature a 108 megapixel camera. Again, famous leaker Digital Chat Station claimed that the Redmi K40 Pro will have not only a Snapdragon 888 processor, but a 108 megapixel camera, which is interesting. And that, so that's really the story. So that's the third camera on the K40 Pro. Now, the K40 series will kind of be launching really, really soon. So that'll be interesting to see how this 108 megapixel camera works theoretically, so that's something to look out for. And obviously Q1 of 2020 has finished, and so a lot of earnings results have come out, and obviously there was the whole GameStop fiasco last week, which was interesting, the price going up. Actually, let me see how much GameStop is worth now, because I believe it's fallen, because people have it's gone down a ridiculous amount of money, down 53% to just $105, which is ridiculous. Seems like everyone's tired and they sold off. Couldn't hold any longer. They wanted money, so they sold off GameStop and they bought silver. So that's interesting. We're not here to talk about GameStop, really. Talk about sales figures. And Nintendo obviously did its Q1 results too. And they revealed an interesting tidbit. And that is that the Nintendo Switch... They've sold 11.57 million Switches last quarter, Q4 of 2020, not Q1 of 2021. I don't know why I said that, but last quarter of 2020, they sold 11 million Switches. Now, Overall, they've sold 79.87 million Switches since they launched it a few years ago. This is impressive. Obviously, the pandemic has created a huge demand for Nintendo Switches. A lot of people want to buy Nintendo Switches because, and also, at least they're in stock, and obviously has, and the Switch has tons of good games to keep people entertained, and also keep families entertained in such a tough time like now, and obviously the numerous lockdowns that have come up across the world. Now, interestingly enough, there aren't many new games that have come out in this time. Again, you know, I mean, Cyberpunk 2077 didn't come out on the Switch, I think. So that's probably the thing to talk about. But more interest, but that hasn't stopped sales of current games from going up. So for context, that's one of the more popular Switch games. We could kind of go through their sales totals. So Mario Kart Deluxe, there are now 33.41 million copies of Mario Kart Deluxe being sold. And that comes on top of, obviously, a more recent release, which is Animal Crossing New Horizons, which has been a big hit during the pandemic. And that game has overall, again, in the last quarter, has sold 5 million copies, which has come to over 31 million units sold overall in its lifetime. Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, 22.85 million sales. And then you go on and on. Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, which kind of came out when the Switch came out, that was 21.45 million. Now, there's not much going on with the world in the world of Nintendo Switch. There are some couple of smaller games that are coming out back and forth. There is an upcoming release, but this is kind of a remaster, and that is this Super Mario World 3D World plus Bowser's Fury. So it sounds to me like a remaster. I don't think this is a brand new game. It says it is a remaster from the looks of it for the Switch. And that's going to come out on February 12th, so that's another interesting release to look forward to. This was announced a few months back, so that's interesting to say the least. So, yeah. Analysis firm Canalys has revealed that Chromebook shipments have hit, overall in 2020, from 14.7 million laptops in 2019 to 30.7 million laptops in 2020. That's Chromebooks, mind you. And that essentially means that overall shipments have almost doubled. Now, the real reason that Chromebooks are quite popular with schools and students, small businesses, and some casual computing folks who kind of have a computer to go through Facebook because phones are too damn small, is that Chromebooks are very affordable. They're kind of lightweight. They're not full-blown computers that can capable of doing remote desktop and God knows what. Computational, machine learning tasks and video editing. No, I mean, these are the users who don't want to use their computers for this. They just want to browse the internet. They want to connect and do work and just, you know, do couple of spreadsheets and Word documents. And so Chromebooks are really good for that. And interestingly enough, that way it's been put. And obviously this past year, 2020 has been interesting. Obviously the pandemic and obviously remote learning, remote working has caused people to obviously run out and buy a new computer. And obviously Windows laptops aren't really the value that they are, and Chromebooks are quite competitively priced. There are good Chromebooks you can get for under $400, which is powerful. And so, literally saw a whole lot of Chromebooks being shipped. Obviously, now 30 million Chromebooks is a lot, and that's basically the markets where Chromebooks are being sold. Outside of it, Windows laptop shipments are massive. Have actually grown many times over, because the rest of the world, Chromebooks are not really sold. Officially, Google doesn't accept that Chromebooks are a viable option. They could do it. I mean, there are a lot of markets where there's good internet access, and you could study from home or work from home. You would really need a Chromebook for this work. You don't need a Windows laptop for it. But hey, not bad for Google. I mean, this has been a little bit of an interesting endeavor for Google. They've essentially have a successful desktop business. I mean, a whole bunch of laptops and convertibles that run on Chrome OS, essentially have the Chrome browser, but people love it. It's popular, and I'm not mad at you for buying a computer just to go to a web browser and access the internet. I mean, there are netbooks. There was a trend of netbooks 10 years ago, 9, 10 years ago. My goodness, there was a trend of netbooks. But I think the difference between then and now is that now your web browser, you could do millions of really powerful tasks. You can stream games, you can stream movies, you can do a lot of work, because heavy computation can be done in the cloud now. And so that means you just have a light interface through a web browser. good example, Canva. I don't know, Canva and, you know, Stadia and GeForce Now. These are the kind of things you'd have full-blown computers for, and now it could be done in the cloud, and you can have a Chromebook for that. So this is, I think, really, really good that there are people going to buy something other than a Windows laptop. It's not, it ain't a Linux, but hey, better than nothing. So that's that. Interestingly, Apple spent $25 million on a movie called CODA, which essentially stands for, which is actually stands for Child of Deaf Adult, which is interesting. And the movie is essentially about a family, a whole family that's deaf, but his more dramatic part, there's the child of this deaf family, one of it is really healthy, can hear properly. And so she kind of helps the whole family out with the business. And then she gets into, then she joins a choir club. I'm reading off the synopsis here. Her choir master encourages her to consider musical, and she has to decide between helping her family and helping her family in pursuing her goal. It's quite an interesting movie. And so this movie has gotten its world premiere at the Sundance Film Festival, iconic film festival, if you know what I'm talking about. If you don't know movies, you'll know what I'm talking about with Sundance. Big, big festival. And then there was a bit of a rights battle. There was Amazon and there was Apple, and both, and obviously film distributors there, you know, want to chase the next big festival film. And then Apple spent $25 million on acquiring worldwide streaming worldwide rights for this movie. And essentially, an Apple now holds the title of spending the most amount of money for a single film at the Sundance Film Festival, which is absolutely insane. It's actually beaten a record from last year of $22.5 million for a movie called Palm Springs that both Hulu and a famous small-time cinema movie distributor, Neon, acquired jointly. What's kind of interesting is that Apple is willing to spend this much money to get a potential hit movie that they could stream exclusively. And also, they don't have much content out there. If you really think about it, they don't have that many shows and movies. I mean, or more specifically, they don't really have the big hit, like, say, Disney Plus or Netflix or Prime Video currently have, really. They don't have their Stranger Things hit or The Mandalorian kind of hit, and they really need one. They've yet to get a hit, and I think it's not really a big business for Apple yet. I mean, their main business is iPhones, if you think about it. So much so that they've even been extending sort of free, the couple of months of Apple TV Plus, the 1 year free of Apple TV Plus that they've had, they've been extending it dramatically. Recently, there was a story that they've extended a free run of Apple TV Plus for some users till June. Which means they're not yet confident of hey, go spend $5. We got award-winning shows. They really want people to be convinced that this is a good service worth paying money for, like Netflix or Disney Plus. But oh well, they're not gonna buy a big studio, and that's the thing. So this will be a long journey for them. That's for sure. They have a lot of money in hand. That's the thing. They have billions to spend. So yeah, oh well. And moving on, a famous analyst, Min Chi Ko, he's kind of famous for his Apple predictions, kind of dropped some details, some deets about the Apple Car that has come out. And now, his research reports have kind of stated that Apple is maybe looking, obviously, he's kind of reiterating the fact that Hyundai will kind of help manufacture the Apple Car. Because, you know, Hyundai can make so many cars and they have a plant in America and all that kind of stuff. More interestingly, he went on to state that Apple could be using Hyundai's EV architecture, or sort of its platform powertrain, known as the EGMP. We've talked about the EGMP before. If you haven't, go back and listen to it, you know. The EGMP is this really cool architecture that Hyundai has designed for its cars, fully electric vehicles from Hyundai and Kia and stuff. That's really, really awesome, and for their sub-brands. And the fact that Apple, and he's stating that Apple could be using the architecture to drive power their first electric cars, I think it's not bad. I mean, it's good given what you get with the EGMP. Again, we've talked about it in length in an earlier episode, and it is quite impressive. I mean, you get very high power charging, you get 0 to 60 of less than 3.5 seconds is in the spec. So that's interesting, to say the least. He went on stating things like, we predict that Apple will launch the Apple Car in 2025 at the earliest. The new iPhone takes about 18 to 24 months for initial specification definition to mass production based on experience. Given a longer development time, higher validation requirements, more complicated supply chain management, and very different sales and after-sales service channels for the automobiles, we believe that Apple, which lacks car building experience, is already on a tight schedule if it wants to launch the Apple Car in 2025. And he went on talking about the fact that how, and then he went on stating, we believe that Apple will leverage existing automaker resources and focus on self-driving soft hardware and software, semiconductors, battery-related technologies, form factor, and internal space designs, innovative user experience, and integration with Apple's existing ecosystem. Leveraging existing automaker resources means using a large number of qualified components from our current automaker partners. Each EV has about 40 to 50 times more components than each smartphone. So if Apple wants to build a complete automotive supply chain on its own, the Apple Car will be released significantly later than 2025 and have the competitive advantage. Now, he has an excellent point here. When I read over the notes he's kind of mentioned. Making cars is hard. I mean, I've already said this before. It's very different from making phones, because phones, a little bit of components, plop together, test, off you go. Give it to Foxconn, they put it together, put it in a box, bish bash boom, the power of UPS, it's at your doorstep in America. That's not the problem. Cars are a whole other segment with its own unique constraints and challenges. And the parts are different. You know, we're talking about batteries and gears and axles and stuff, and if Apple gets nitty gritty with those little itty meeny miny little bits and bobs, which essentially to, you know, design an entire powertrain that's good for them and then have self-driving on it and user experience, it's kind of right. I mean, Apple would only release a car in 2030, not in the next three or four or five years. It takes time. And so I think it's good on Apple, and I think it's like good that Apple is looking to work with Hyundai to pump out its first electric car. It's going to take a lot of effort. And in the fact that Honda will help out Apple with a lot of the technical bits, like the battery and the gear, the motors, like Honda has really good cars. It's not, they don't make horrible cars, they make good cars. And so, you know, that part is already figured out. And so Apple could focus on other things. They could make the UI better. They could make better designs, better interiors and exteriors, and better software. And they can put more effort on other things that are very important, like autonomous driving. You know, so it's an interesting note from Minchiko. I mean, it's very interesting what he said here. This is a quite fascinating insight from him. And I mean, it's interesting how he kind of mentioned that if Apple wants to release a EV of their own very quickly, they'll have to work with a bunch of players. They'll have to work with car makers or assemblers to like put the car together. Obviously, Apple won't reassemble it itself. It'll need a third party to do it, like quite like how Foxconn puts together iPhones. They'll have to have someone who does it. And I feel like Hyundai is a good partner, obviously, but then obviously there's a problem with Hyundai. You know, they lose control of the process, and you know, they'd have Apple kind of control every bit of it. I feel like the more we've been hearing about the Apple Car, like the more concrete it's getting day by day, like the more we're learning about the car and how it'll end up shaping, and I think it won't be the goofy, you know, iPhone glor blown up to a vehicle with like a ultra curvy touchscreen with Siri on it. Like it's becoming more realistic day by day. Like electric cars really are smartphones on wheels, if you think, or a computer on wheel. Look at Teslas. It's computational vehicles, not even electric vehicles, more like a computing car. It's a computer on wheels. We're getting much closer, and we're starting to get an idea where Apple is looking at. But actually, I think the biggest focus by the Apple Car is the self-driving. I think that they want a car that drives itself to anywhere, and that could be a real revolution right there. Could change everything. But I mean, but the problem is we don't know how good Apple's is with self-driving technology. We don't know how much capability they have. I feel like they could be the first to offer a consumer self-driving car, like full autonomous driving. You just you essentially just like type an address on a touch screen and it just starts driving itself. I mean, but yeah, I mean, if you think about it, if they actually offer such a capable full self-driving car, this would create a real competition. It could bring in real heat into the race for self-driving cars. So that's something to look out for. This could be a moment bigger than the iPhone probably, or bigger than, Apple moving from Intel to its own chipsets. Like, this could be a paradigm shift of its own. I'm not jinxing it. I really mean it. This could be a bit of a, because the car industry is very different. It's kind of slow. Apple could bring real dirt to the market right there. And then finally, Ford announced that it's teaming up with Google, essentially. It's teaming up with Google and visit millions of Ford and Lincoln cars will have Android built in from 2023. On top, and obviously it'll built in Google apps and services, everything from YouTube to Google Assistant. And also Ford will use Google Cloud in its business, which is kind of interesting. Kind of cool that I mean, until recently, Ford's in touchscreen dashes were powered by their very own software called Sync, I believe, that like ran third-party apps and services, and you can click and you could stream stuff from the internet, but ran on Sync. And now that they're making new more and more electric cars, as the Mustang Mach-E and then the electric Mustang that essentially will be a coupe, hopefully. And a lot and the F-150 electric and a lot of Ford cars that'll be electric, they'll need a top-notch software experience, and so they're picking Android. And I think that's a safe bet, frankly, because Android could offer a blazing fast software experience. I mean, makes sense if you know what I mean. So driving it further here with Android. So yeah. Anyways, what do you think of everything you've heard today? Let me know on Instagram and Twitter at said_maun99. Follow me there. And obviously, if you have anything to say, any feedback about the show, let me know on those two places. Reach me there if you can. Subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, where you're listening to this right now. Go and subscribe so you don't miss another episode, or the next episode on Thursday. Guys, it takes a lot of work, and I could be binge watching stuff on Netflix, but no, I just got to do podcasts because I love doing podcasts. So we really will appreciate telling your friends to listen to it, sharing it to your friends and family, subscribing. Anything help, any every bit helps. But yeah, till Thursday, this is your boy signing out. Peace. Have a great day. Take care. Have a great day. I'll see you on Thursday. Till then, it's your boy signing out. Ciao. Thanks for listening, as always.